Now we're being pulled down. The benefits are being pulled down. We're not being paid well. And so who's going to want to be working for the public sector in the future? We saw Nick leave to a brighter horizons. What's his name left not long ago? We heard the police chief say he's not getting recruits. Nobody wants to be a cop anymore. Nobody wants to be a firefighter anymore. We're not going to have other people working for the city because it's not attractive anymore. The pay isn't there, and the benefits are being nickel and dimed away, chiseled away. We are going to have to pay attention to this very, very soon. And whatever the reasons are, and I agree with Alderman Nelson on some of those reasons.
Taylor.
Same thing. Alderman Taylor. Same thing.
I at least say it. I say it publicly all the time.
But, you know, we've got to pay attention because it's going to be a train wreck down the road. And I'm not going to support this. I know it's what we've got to do. Mary, you said you don't like it either. Do you have any options for it? I don't have any options for it. But I'm still going to say no to it. But we've got to pay attention to this. Or we're going to have we talk about immigrants taking jobs that no Americans want. Well, maybe someday immigrants will be working at City Hall and working on the fire department and a police department and DPW. I don't know. If they're taking jobs no Americans want, what Americans are going to want to work for low pay and no benefits?
Well, you mentioned pay. I will tell you that my company, maximum increase has been 1%.
But
it's different for me because I'm a sales guy, but maximum salary increase was 1%. And there's a high deductible plan with higher deductibles than this. And the PPO plan is more expensive than this and with higher deductibles.
What about dental and eye care?
That's included, but yeah. I mean, that's. But anyway, okay.
And
all right.
I just got to throw this in there. 1% of X amount might be different than 1% of a different amount. We don't have those real comparables, and
that's
I'm not expecting
profound.
To say that. Well, it's true, though. I mean, we can say we got a 5% increase so on $1,000, you know, and somebody else gets a 1% increase on.
We're paying somebody $1,000.
Maybe if we just had health care for all, we wouldn't be in this situation.
All right.
I think we have a motion.
Except for Lyme's disease. We're
but there's
not
a complete
that.
Motion on the floor.
It's true.
We're not paying for that. Roll call. We need a roll
call.
Well,
wait a minute. We need to make sure that the motion is correct.
It's the motion. Yeah, we'll do. You guys did it.
Traditional option two. Right?
The motion is presented on the council action sheet.
That's
a high deductible.
Barber said.
Traditional option two, and then some direction for me to move forward to make these things happen.
That's what he said.
Mm-hmm. All right. Request for a roll call, Madam Clerk.
Alderman Dandrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
No.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Barber.
Aye.
Alderman Nelson.
No.
Motion carries 4 ayes, 2 noes, no abstentions. Okay, let's go back to item G.
And Alderman wanted a brief 5-minute recess.
Let's take a recess. We'll be back at 8:30.
And obviously the Alderman of the second really wants that 5-minute recess. Go!
Yeah.
Okay.
I like how the one looks.
8:32, we're back in open session. We move on to item G9, presentation of the 2019 Mayor's Recommended Budget. Mr. Liberta.
Okay, I know it's late, so I will try to go pretty quick, but the budget is a large document, so it will take some time. This is the proposed, the Mayor's Recommended 2019 budget. And as he mentioned the other day, we were at a meeting, he referenced that we are trying to conceive sort of some sustainability to the budget. And in fact, Alderman Mayer mentioned at the same meeting that we should figure out how to have some sort of long-term plan so we're not always dealing with this. And we actually spent a fair bit of time thinking about that sort of what I would refer to as the annual budget dilemma. You know, why is every budget tough? I get that from every department head. When's there going to be an easy year? Why is every budget tough? At the bottom of this screen is just some statements that were in the last two budget presentations where we talked about pushing the limits of what can be accomplished. Existing operations and existing revenues cannot be squeezed further. You know, the budget does not have a fiscally prudent or viable way to maintain existing services. So I tried to figure out how to summarize why every budget was tough. And there's sort of five explanations I came up with that are all worth at least a brief discussion. The first one's the big picture, that expenditures grow. On the screen there, I've taken our entire general fund and really boiled it down to three expenditures. The adopted budget using 2018's $26 million, you back out the contingency. We have $17 million in personnel costs, about $3 million in health insurance, and about $4.7 million in supplies and services.
Before you leave that, can you back up a second? 81% is personnel. So the comment was made that we pay less. The reality is you guys told us to pay at 65% of the market, and there's a comparable in there for private sector. That it used to be 76%, something like that, was personnel. So what we're seeing here is we've got a lot of high-quality, long-established employees that are now getting paid more than because even though we lost Nick, we're not losing them for that particular reason. Mm-hmm. So 81% is that's a lot of money, and that kind of makes it you know, how do you cut the budget? Well, you know, it's which department goes. So Mark, sorry.
Well, if you look at those three base numbers and just apply some sort of annual increases. A minimum growth level, short-term sustainable, if you assume you can get by a budget with 1.5% an increase in personnel costs, well, that's going to add $250,000 to your budget that you have to deal with. 1.5% is actually very low. If you're trying to do our progress to market rate increases, you're not going to fit those in really. That is challenging to be able to budget and keep pace with your comparables. So more practically, you'd need to be somewhere around 2% a year. Realistically, when you talk progress to market rate, you talk the fact that the bulk of this money, the single biggest group, are your two represented groups. And you mentioned Act 10. Yes, we can set wages for everyone else. But the WRC, the Wisconsin Employment Commission, they're going to have something to say about what you're paying your police and firefighters because they still have labor contracts and they're still going to get comparable wages with other communities. You lose that independence. Same thing on health insurance. You can try, Paul and I tell you, we try to keep our increases to 5%. That's not a long-term sustainable. You know, you're more likely looking at a minimum 8% in health insurance costs. Same thing with supplies and services. A 1% cost of living is going up more than that. We'll talk about that some. You're probably looking at about a 2% if you're looking to try and get some sustainability. So the big picture of why every budget is tough is basically expenditures grow. At just these simple numbers that are barely sustainable, you're looking at $500,000 a year. Okay? Our levy increase for this year is less than 20% of that. You're probably looking at closer to $855,000 a year. So there's your range. Without doing anything, that's why budgets are tough. That's the first big picture that expenditures grow. And this just summarizes the same information on the other table. Even at the minimum level, that additional required, if you look at it as levy, not saying you have to only use levy, I'm just saying to put it in a perspective, you're looking at 2.2, 3.2, or a little over 4% a year, each and every year, in order just to keep your current level of services, not to expand them, not to add people for growth, just to keep what you have moving forward. Another reason that every budget is tough is because we are functioning in a marketplace, and I think that gets overlooked because we're always asked to do more with less, do more with less. Well, we don't have to increase that budget. But that's simply not the case. The city and all of the department heads were reactionary to the marketplace, and we simply have a lack of control over it. For example, marketplace pricing. You know, we have to buy gasoline from a vendor. We don't get to decide what the price is gas is. When it goes up, we have to build it in the budget, or we go over and we find something else to cut. But at the same time, gas is going up in price. The paper products, you know, for your printer or for your toilet, they're going up. And we don't have control over those things. We, as department heads, try to figure out what to do. You know, the building inspector may make sure he's scheduling people so they have routes better so we're using less gas. You know, the police chief, I've seen departments where they instruct people not to idle their cars and things like that. So you can do things that react to it. But when you have 125 vehicles, which is what we have on our insurance policy, we're going to buy a lot of gas, and we're going to pay whatever the price for gas is. So we are we don't have a lot of control of pricing in the marketplace. Similarly, the nature of how items are sold surprisingly controls our budgets a lot. Department heads try to work around this, but there's little they can do. An example down in IT, the entire IT industry nationwide and worldwide is moving away from where you bought a product, put it on your computer, and used it, to where you're now buying licenses, and then you annually pay to upgrade it. So that changes our cost considerably, where you could buy something once in 5 years and then buy it again 5 years later. Now you're buying it once, and then you're paying about 20% the purchase price again the next year and every year after to maintain that and keep the license and get the service and get the upgrades, because the industry's changed and security has changed, and everybody keep having to put out more patches and keep it going. And that's just not in IT. That's in just about all of the products and services that we use. That industry changes. Similarly, one reason you can't just sit on one budget and leave it there is because new product opportunities become essential. When staff isn't growing and new items out there are out there for efficiency and effectiveness, you really end up having to move to them. You know, I think you can look at the automatic license plate readers that the police department uses. They don't have to have those. Many departments don't. But that is an invaluable tool that gives, you know, one officer on the road 1,000 sets of eyes. You know, when you can't add staff, you have to add things like that. But when you do, you pay for them. You pay for them to put them in. You pay to maintain them. You pay your IT to keep them up. You pay the maintenance fees. So those, that lack of control over how products move and the fact that you have to keep up with the nature of the service you're providing as a department head and as a city. Well, and you look at those three examples and you want to say, well, you know, luckily that's only 20% of our budget, because 80% of it, the mayor just pointed out, was personnel. So we don't really have to worry about that. The bulk of our budget, it doesn't come into play. But the marketplace really does drive even the city when it comes to, even with Act 10. You know, we do have employees who move for other wages and benefits. The percentage that I showed, the 1%, you can get away with that for a little while, a very short term. If you just said, we can't afford anything, we want our taxes down, we're not increasing any wages, you could not do that very long before people would find other jobs and move on. Particularly if you then recognize, like I said, that the police and fire unions have the WRC to go for. You really can't do that for them at all unless they're a partner with you, because if they take your arbitration, you're going to end up with wherever your neighboring communities are. So you like to think you have control over wages and benefits, and in the short term, you can, but in the long term, it is market-driven, or else you end up you know, with other productivity issues where people have moved. You're maybe getting employees who you sort of have a knowledge lag, so you have some loss in productivity because you're constantly turning over employees. So all of those, there's a functioning in the marketplace, that lack of control. That is another reason it's a tough budget, because all of these things drive up prices. The levy limits is absolutely something that you have to recognize is what's making every budget a tough budget. Current levy limits were initiated in 2005. They did some back in the 80s that eventually went away, and then they thought it was a good idea when it wasn't the first time. They put it in place, and for the first 5 years or so, they actually had a minimum that was built into the statute. For 2009, 2010, it was 3%. Didn't matter what your net new construction was, you could still go up to 3%. They got rid of that when they made them permanent in 2011. Now, obviously, we went through a period, 2014 and 17, where levy limits weren't an issue for us. We didn't want our levy to go up at all. We found other ways to do it, and we used up a lot of mechanisms in our budget to do it, and drained a couple buckets, so those options aren't available to us, but it was very successful. It got to the point where last year we did realize we not only had to do it, we had to use some of the limited remaining allowable existing debt levy in order to maintain current services. Ehlers and Associates, at a presentation that they gave about a year ago on municipal finance issues, talking about the levy limits, on one of their slides it said, levy limits this strict are unstable or unsustainable and are negatively impacting the ability of municipalities to provide the services their citizens and businesses need. And this budget is a good example of where our growth level has really inhibited our, through the levy limits, really inhibited our ability to try and retain some of the service levels we have. One other reason that often I think gets overlooked for why it's so tough for municipal budgeting is we have a list of core services. We don't do a lot of extra stuff. You know, citizens know what they expect from us, you know, and that's what we do. We can't go and say, well, let's just stop doing this. It's not a profitable side of what we do, so let's discontinue the service. We have very few things in our sort of repertoire of activities that could fall into that category. So if the city of Franklin provides, and to a significant degree, just the core services the community expects and at a service level the community expects, then our primary goal year to year of a sustainable budget would be to annually achieve a maintenance of service, if we're just doing what we can. So a maintenance of service budget, almost by definition, is one where where it would be difficult to find any expenditures to cut. You can't just say, let's stop having, you know, a library, because there's statutes around that. Let's stop having a health department, because there's statutes around that. There is very little in our budget to cut. So when a business looks at how can I save money, they look at often what part of my business can I jettison. We're a public sector municipal service. We don't have a part of our business that we can jettison. And lastly, one of the reasons that it's tough is we have limited revenue sources too. Other businesses, you know, in the private sector, they can go out and actually try and get into new businesses, generate new revenue. We have a lot of constraints in our ability to do that. If you look at our levy, our total levy across all funds is around 83% compared to our general fund expenditures. In the general fund itself, it's somewhere between 2/3 and 70%. And that state controlled by the levy limits, not a lot of flexibility there. Intergovernmental revenues for 2018 is about 10% of our general fund. I think the 2019 is going to be around 7%. Again, no real control there whatsoever. So you're running out of things you can even influence. The ones that you can have limited size. You know, ambulance revenues have done a lot for us in the last couple of years. But if you look at even a fairly substantive increase that we're going to talk about here in a minute, it's still only about 60% of what their own department went up, not to mention all the other departments and employees and those departments that don't have revenue generators, such as, you know, ambulance fees and building inspections. So the few revenues we do have that we do have some control over, they're not substantive enough to solve the kind of budget dilemma that we talked about at the beginning, where you need $500,000 to $800,000 a year, each and every year, in order to make it work. Lastly on this topic, the known revenue alternatives are simply not very palatable for most communities. There are some communities looking into the wheel tax. You know, places have local sales option tax in, you know, some states or locations. Some can have a road surfacing fee. They don't, you know, They may have put your road in for you 20 years ago, but if you want it repaved now, you're going to pay for it because the levy's not paying for that. You know, so there's things you can do like that, but they're not very palatable. So that limit on revenue sources really constrains it. So when you put all of those together, that the expenditure growths are at the control of the marketplace and not something that department heads have control over, that they have to function within that. They are largely reactionary to the marketplace. Levy limits are in place. We can't get rid of core services, and it's difficult even to cut them. And revenue options are limited by statute. So that is, I believe, why every budget is tough, and it's not going to get different.
You didn't put in there declining revenues based on state legislation that is sticking it to us.
Well, I say that all the time.
I know. Well, I thought I'd say it this time.
All right, that's good.
If you look at it.
Somebody besides me has got to step up and say these things. Everybody else is mute.
Kristen mentioned it. Hotel motel room tax. Three quarters of that, gone.
Yeah.
That was a big dollar amount.
Kenny.
So at the beginning, I presented sort of three models that I called sort of the minimum. One was an ongoing. So I think it's worth sort of looking at the validity of that, because if you're considering the argument or presentation I'm making, you have to look at whether the percentages I applied are reasonable at all. The annual percentage increases are referenced in the model. Yeah, you can debate it. You can say, well, that 2%, you could do with 1.5. But you begin to start talking about numbers that aren't great. But there's clearly some level of growth that has to be expected for each of those areas, assuming no growth would not be a valid model. When you look at personnel, the 1.5%, I consider that a minimum because it's a short-term strategy before the impacts of increased turnover would become evident in your operations and in your vacancies and in your overall performance. That level doesn't provide for progress to market rate adjustments at all. It's just basic flat across the board in all likelihood. It assumes you're going to be able to have success with the WERC, which is probably about the worst assumption you could make. 2% growth, that's more realistic, but really it's that 3% if you're trying to maintain current employees, you're trying to provide progress to market, and you're anticipating the effects of labor agreements for not only for your represented people, but for your supervisors of the represented people. So on the personnel side, realistically, you're probably trying to fund that $522,000 a year just to maintain your existing staff. On health insurance, well, cost increases there, that's a national issue. Our broker's indicating that this year the marketplace is trending at around 11%. Significant plan design changes you've already dealt with. We doubled them in 2018 and just moved them up considerably again. I would not expect that we would be moving them for a number of years now. We've sort of gotten ahead of the curve and try and get some stability there so that families can learn to work within and around that and learn to adjust to the high deductible health plans. So that 5% growth I had in the minimum model, that's pretty optimistic. I think that's assuming you're going to be able to make plan design changes. We've done that the last couple of years, and I think we've tapped that well. And I got a sense of that from the council as well, given that the vote was 4-2. I think that's pushed it as far as it could. One more vote, and it wasn't going. That 7 or 8% in the other two models I gave is more accurate. So again, you're looking at $150,000 to $240,000 a year, each and every year. On the supplies and services, I gave you a little range there, 1% up to 2%. Well, this is just the Bureau of Labor Statistics 12-month percent change. This is all urban consumers. It's the current series. It's the best data for what's happening. And the only 1% you see there was 1 month, back in 2011, which was taken 11 months of data from 2010. So, for department heads to keep their general line items, their regular line items in the budget within 1% growth, they're clearly swimming upstream on this one because costs are moving faster than that. You know, and Paul gave me a good analogy when he and I were chatting. You know, we don't rent a lot of buildings, but for people who rent a building, they know their rent continually goes up. And it really sort of pulls in all the factors that are affecting that building and the costs associated with it. Those same costs affect people who own the buildings and all the aspects of maintaining that building. And those aren't going up at the 1%. So realistically, it's that 2% that if you're looking for a sustainable budget. So that ongoing sustainability model I listed at the beginning, you might want to argue that it's, you know, not realistic. There's no way we need $800,000 to $900,000 a year just to maintain operations. But I think these three examples I gave just show that that is realistic. That is why we have the challenging kind of budget that we do and have to go through these steps. So what we tried to do in this budget is look at the mayor's recommended budget. We took sort of a central approach. The central approach that I took was attempt to address the 2019 general fund revenues and expenditures within an initial framework of a long-term perspective. And the goal I took was to try to achieve an ongoing level of sustainability while relying on the municipal tax levy to only support the short-term minimum. So let me tell you what I'm saying there. This table here shows what our growth in net new construction has been. We haven't been above 2% since 2008. We've been down here between 1% and 2%, mostly below 1% since 2010. These are the three lines that come from the three models that I talked. So what we've tried to do in this budget is apply levy at this level and find other ways, other revenues, and other opportunities to get up to this level of increase. So that was the approach, and that was the goal we set for ourselves, because, frankly, it's hard to look at this budget every year and go, I got to find another $1 million. Got to find another $1 million. You know, the budget is tough for everybody, and I think Paul and I would definitely agree. And so this gave us a perspective and said, let's assume that there is an expectation that the city has to meet that minimum, but then let us figure out how to get to what was that ongoing level. Doesn't allow for growth necessarily, but how do we get to that? So what target does that mean we're looking from an expenditure side? What we actually have in the document you'll be given, if you look at the 2018 budget, back out the restricted contingency, you're aware how we do that. We had some planned deficit spending, so the 2018 expenditures were at this level. What you'll be getting in the document is about, again, backing out restricted contingency. We have about $954,000 in increased expenditures built in there when you count the wages and the supplies and stuff. So that's in line. The total expenditure increase is in line with what I said that model is, trying to get your baseline to that ongoing sustainability. That was our goal. Those were the expenditures we set up. Here's basically how we did it. We did anticipate the new municipal property tax levy. That's the number that was needed in that first model, the minimum, around $450,000 of increase. So we took 1.72% of new levy. A little bit of it went to two other funds, not available in the general fund, so I had to back that out. And then this is the state's personal property tax aid, the new statutory change. So didn't want to sort of, I don't want to say double dip, that's the wrong phrase, but I think you get the point. If the state's now giving this in lieu of personal property tax, we definitely backed it out. So we added a net sort of personal property tax combined tax-related support. That's funding about 445 of it. We did get the benefit of this year